So this guy gets killed. Now, what does Trump do about it? He is totally capitulating and totally surrendering and totally backing down. I'm going to read through. This is a series of developments since the weekend. First and foremost, Trump says that ICE is withdrawing from Minneapolis after the killing. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, Gregory Bovino, the Border Patrol official in charge of President Trump's on-the-ground immigration enforcement in Minneapolis, is expected to leave the city, according to two U.S. officials. Some of the federal agents in the city are also expected to begin leaving on Tuesday, Mayor Jacob Frey of Minneapolis said after a phone call on Monday with President Trump. After 2 days of blowback over the shooting and his own attacks on the victim, Mr. Trump struck a more cooperative tone on Monday, first by dispatching Tom Homan to the state and then describing in a social media post a good call with Governor Tim Walz, whom he had also blamed for the shooting. He said that they had been on a similar wavelength. So they're pulling out their top guy. Do you know what that is? That's a scalp. That's what that is. Trump got everybody all ramped up. We're going into Chicago. We're going into New York. We're going to deport everybody. If you are illegal, you are going back. It is not negotiable. Take your plane ticket or we will remove you. Remember all that tough talk a year ago? Remember when Tom Homan said in January, we're coming to Chicago. We're coming to every major. You better pack your bag. Remember that? They got everybody all jazzed up. And you got Stephen Miller and Tom Homan and Greg Bovino beating their chest on TV, defending the actions and the policy of the administration. Greg Bovino became a symbol of ICE brutality. It's all over social media, on Instagram, on TikTok. They find this guy. I'm talking about the left-wing agitators. They find this guy, whether he's in Target, at a gas station, at a restaurant, and they surround him, and they shove their phones in his face, and they threaten to fight him, and they scream at him and swear at him. And he is a representative as a white male, as a gruff, older, tough white guy of ICE brutality, of nativism, white supremacy, Trumpism. Now, after this protester gets killed, Trump yanks him out of the city. That is a scalp for the left. That's a victory. You have handed them a severed head on a silver platter. You've said, please, we surrender. Here's our sacrificial offering. Now, what do you think this does? If you're some piece of shit progressive that is in Minneapolis, this is a victory. You go out and say, we did it. Keep the pressure up. The sacrifice of Rene Good and the other guy will not be in vain. It's working. We're chasing ICE out of the city. We're chasing Border Patrol out. We're escalating. We're laying down our lives. This is like the resistance. That stupid bitch on Twitter, she said, remember in Star Wars when they said the resistance will be remembered for generations? This is how they think of this. And in a word, what this does is it emboldens them. It's like I said the other night, this is a confidence game. It's a war. It's a game. And it has a lot to do with confidence. You have emboldened them. You have just given them the realization that if they keep showing up, you will back down. You will make concessions. You will retreat. If we chase ICE, if we make their jobs hell, if we get in their face, they will make mistakes. If we show up in the streets, if we put pressure on Target and Marriott and all the brands that are involved in this in one way or another, they will blink. They will back down. And if you think you're winning, you make more sacrifices. You push harder. If you think the chi of the battle is on your side, you're going to keep pushing. That is what Trump has now invited. Not only this, Greg Bovino gets yanked. Then Trump undercuts him and says openly, well, we're going to back down. Also from the Times, it says, quote, President Trump said on Tuesday, quote, we're going to de-escalate a little bit. when it comes to his immigration crackdown in Minneapolis. The president also acknowledged the aggressive tactics of Gregory Bovino, the Border Patrol official known for his confrontational style who was pulled out of Minneapolis. In an interview with Fox News, Trump described him as a pretty out there kind of guy. He said, in some cases it's good. Maybe it's not good here. On Capitol Hill, the top three House Democrats came out in support of an effort to impeach Kristi Noem. Republicans were also critical. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina told reporters Ms. Noem should be fired. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska struck a similar note. It's over, okay? You gave up. You gave the game away. Not only do you give the left a scalp, but you undercut your own guy. Now, what does this do for your own side? So you have just told the left, if the left pushes really, really hard, if they lay down their lives, we will bitch. We will eventually back out. We will withdraw. We will surrender. What have you told your own side? You've told your own side, if you make a mistake, if you make an error, I will not have your back. I will pull you out. I will put you on the bench, and then I'll throw you under the bus in the media. So what does this do to the psychology of the ICE officers? You're asking ICE officers to go and fight these animals and potentially die, potentially get shot in the face. They're being put in an impossible situation. They go out there, they're being chased, they're being harassed, they're being overwhelmed. Protesters are blowing whistles. It's a confusing, dangerous environment when you can't hear, when you can't see. You got people running up to you, confronting you. And now what you have is doubt, hesitancy, reluctance, second guessing. If you're an ICE agent, okay, we're in the freezing cold in Minneapolis. We're chasing these beaners. I happen to be a beaner, so I can say that. We're chasing these beaners around. We're chasing the beans. These shithead radicals get in the streets, blowing their whistles. They're armed with assault rifles running up on you. You start to wonder, well, if I kill this guy, I'm going to live, but what's going to happen to me? Am I going to get hanged? Am I going to be investigated? Am I going to be prosecuted for murder? Is Trump going to have my back? If I don't shoot this guy, I might die right now. So what does this do to the average ICE agent? They're demoralized. They're less willing to do their job. I'm not going to show up to Spring Hill Suites in Marriott, a $150 a night hotel, where I'm going to be watching outside my window as a mob of people is formed to dox and kill me, and then go out in the freezing cold in my car, get chased around in a dangerous high-speed chase by radicals, then try to do my duty, have armed people confronting me if I don't know that the administration is going to have my back. If our commander has been withdrawn from the city, if our own administration is telling us we made a mistake. So this is why I said Trump, he is what he is. He is not that guy. He is not the guy to do this job because he is weak. He is weak. He lacks follow through. He never follows through on anything and he has no strategy. It's all tactics. It's all short term. What is going to play well today? What is going to play well this week? What are people saying on Twitter? Someone who is that reactive, someone who is that short term in their thinking with such a short time horizon cannot accomplish anything that requires a sustained effort through difficulty and lack of popularity. Can't do it. So Trump goes up on TV and says, we're pulling our commander. We're giving the left a scalp. He admits that we're flawed. He says, oh, we made a mistake and this guy is too extreme and we need to de-escalate. So you're demoralizing your own people. You're admitting fault and saying, we are the bad guys. You're emboldening the enemy. They think they have a victory. Then add insult to injury. The real leadership is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. ICE and Border Patrol are under DHS. Now, Republicans want Kristi Noem to go. Democrats want her impeached. Republican senators are saying she's doing a terrible job. We need to question her. We're going to fire her. So you're not standing by your people. You need a united front. You need to stick up for your people. Even if Kristi Noem is terrible, and she is, you need to have her back because she's your girl right now. Greg Bovino, maybe he's too intense. You tell him to chill out behind the scenes and you keep him in Minneapolis just on account of. That's what you should have done. You keep him in the city. Maybe you don't parade him around in the streets, but you keep him there just to say that he's there. You don't have underlings telling the media that he's been fired. And then the White House comes out and says, no, he hasn't been fired, but we did withdraw him. You don't certainly have Trump on TV and say he's out there. No, you leave him in the city, at least for the next week, just to have him there. And you back him up. You go on TV and said he's a patriot. And your girl, Kristi Noem, she is a fucking idiot. But you know what? She's your girl right now. And she's the head honcho running the operation. You got to back her up. You got to whip the Republicans and say, we back up our administration. You got to get out ahead of it and say, Kristi Noem is doing a great job. Greg Bovino's a patriot. We're not going anywhere. Our answer is, you don't want to get in trouble, then don't attack our law enforcement. You reframe it. Trump is in Iowa talking about the economy. You should be in Minneapolis rallying the troops. They don't have any fight in them, though. It's like I said, this requires total focus, total mobilization, marshal every resource. They don't want to fight it out. Too messy. Too ugly. It's in the midterms. Oh, the opinion polling's not so good. We want to get off the subject. We're going to make a half-ass effort to change the conversation. They don't even know what their line is. First, they come out and call him a terrorist. Then they come out and say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. First, they come out and say, he's a bad guy. Now they say, well, it's a tragedy, but also he had a gun. Okay, so which is it? This isn't your first rodeo. It gets better. Now Stephen Miller is piling on Kristi Noem. Hey, and by the way, where is Stephen Miller, huh? Hey, plan-trusting idiots. Hey, Trump cucks. Hey, cuck chair Trump supporters. Hey, plan-trusting idiots. Hey, bottom-feeding scum. Where's the hero Stephen Miller, huh? Where's our number one Jew? Where's our base Jew, huh? Where'd he go? Remember all that propaganda? Oh, Stephen Miller is just autistically thinking about deportations all the time. Really? Where is he now? Because I thought he was supposed to be the next president. I thought he was one of those remarkable Jews that is an ally of the Nazis. I thought Stephen Miller was the guy who is really behind it in all these speeches. Where's our guy? Where's he in the middle of all this? Huh? I don't see him on TV. Haven't seen him. Haven't seen him after he posted that on Twitter. And then, I don't know, they must have bitch slapped him behind the scenes. Where'd he go? Where's our tough guy running the White House? Where is he? You tell me. Are we trusting the plan? Stephen Miller, if you can hear us, he's our base Jew. Oh, I love how he's just always autistically thinking about how to deport illegals. He has so much aura. I guess that Stephen Miller's not here today, huh? It's almost like this is precisely what happened 7 years ago, 8 years ago, in 2018. Stephen Miller is now moving behind the scenes to put all the blame on Kristi Noem, to isolate her and make her the fall girl. This is what he says according to Politico. It says, quote, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller is distancing himself from Homeland Security amid widespread outrage over the killing of Alex Pretty by immigration agents in Minneapolis. Miller, an architect of President Trump's hardline immigration enforcement campaign, said that his initial remarks, including labeling Pretty as a terrorist, were based on information from DHS. It's their fault. He also said the agency may not have been following White House instructions with its overall handling of the enforcement operation in Minnesota. Because you see, Miller is the deputy chief of staff of the White House, acting deputy chief of staff, strategic advisor. So Miller's coming from the White House. Homeland Security is down the hall and to the left. So if this dirtbag gets shot and Miller accidentally calls him a terrorist, Miller says, oh, well, you know, that's because Homeland Security isn't following the guidance of the White House. I misspoke because the White House got bad information from Homeland Security. Nice. Courageous. Heroic. What a hero. Serves you right. You trusted a Jew. Okay? I don't care what his name is. Stephen Miller. Doesn't matter. He's a Jew. Okay? In a statement, Miller said that the White House told DHS to use extra personnel sent to the state from Customs and Border Protection to keep protesters away from the fugitive apprehension operations, suggesting the operation, or rather the confrontation that led to Preddy's death violated those instructions. He said, we are evaluating why the CBP team may not have been following that protocol. What a worm. What a snake. What a disgusting rat. Filth. So look at your White House. Look at it. Dread it. Run from it. Where did it bring you? Back to me. Back to the Groypers. Yeah, yeah. You trusted the plan. Serves you right. Dread it. Run from it. Destiny arrives all the same. Where did it lead you? Look at your White House, you bitch. Look at your White House, you bitch. Look at it. Look at it. You kill one idiot. You kill one little left-wing protester. Who cares? And the White House is going crazy. The administration's going crazy. We're de-escalating. They're yanking their guy back, throwing him under the bus. Kristi Noem is getting fed to the wolves. Stephen Miller is distancing himself. They don't even know what their line is about the whole thing. Well, it's a tragedy, but he shouldn't have had a gun. Well, he's a terrorist. I got bad intel. Oh, I never heard that. Your golden age. And you know what's really funny to me? You know what's hilarious? Excuse me. In the first month of 2025, everybody was saying, this second Trump administration is different. It's different this time. Look at how fast they're moving. They're competent. There's no leaks. There's so much energy. They're moving so quickly. It's a blitz. The left doesn't have time to counter what they're doing. They're flooding the zone. They're doing 100 things in a day. The left can barely keep up. You remember this? I remember in the first few months, because I read the news, that the left was literally struggling to keep up. And they were talking about how they were struggling to keep up, talking about how it was demoralizing, saying we can literally barely keep up with how many awful things Trump is doing every single day, and that's impeding our ability to counter it. Now look at it. Look at the infighting. Trump is throwing Bovino under the bus. An underling said he was fired. The press secretary says, actually, he wasn't fired. They're just pulling him out. Trump goes on the news and says he's out there. Republican senators want to fire Kristi Noem. They're working with the Democrats. Stephen Miller is blaming Kristi Noem for the whole thing and for the bad statement that he himself made. He's probably getting a talking to behind the scenes. Trump in the White House is saying we need to back down. What a disaster. What a joke. This is supposed to be a golden age. This is supposed to be executive power. We could just do things. It's a disaster. They can't fight because they're not organized. Like, you can't even get to the battlefield because none of these people are serious. Stephen Miller is a craven political opportunist. He is a craven, unscrupulous political opportunist and a Jew. He does not care about mass deportations. He is a smug, aloof, flippant, self-aggrandizing, opportunistic Jew. And he was in the first term, and he is in the second term. He is a joke. Kristi Noem is a joke. Look at her. She goes out to these things in a costume. She went to Spirit Halloween and got your sexy Border Patrol costume. She's over there with her plate carrier. She's an idiot. Everyone says that she's sleeping with Corey Lewandowski, who's really running the show. She's just straight up an idiot. She cares more about anti-Semitism than mass deportations. And Trump is 100 years old. He's fallen asleep. This is your team. They were never going to bring us to the promised land. This is the team that's going to do the deportations. This is the team that's going to marshal every government resource to deliver the largest deportation operation in U.S. history. Not a chance. These people are fools, and they are incompetent and disorganized, no loyalty, and they don't even want it bad enough. And now they're at each other's throats. It gets better. This is from Nick Sorter, who's on the ground in Minneapolis. According to him, Border Patrol has been given new orders not to arrest non-criminal illegal aliens. Nick Sorter, he's on the ground doing all the coverage of the left-wing agitators. He said he spoke to two Border Patrol agents, and they each independently said, the new plan is they're not going to deport non-criminal illegal aliens anymore. So remember we talked about that distinction from the Obama administration? Now we have Obama's deportation policy. We have deported fewer people than Obama, and now we have the Obama deportation doctrine, which is, if you're merely here illegally, we are not going to mess with you. We're only going to deport the criminals, and that's what everybody is saying. This is from the Republicans, also from, I believe this is The Hill. It says, quote, President Trump's aggressive deportation campaign is making Republicans uneasy. As the midterms approach, GOP lawmakers, candidates, strategists, and people close to the White House are warning that the administration's mass deportation policy and the wall-to-wall coverage of enforcement operations, arrest of U.S. citizens, and clashes between protesters and federal officials could cost them their razor-thin House majority. It's reading that paragraph, I think I said that verbatim in 2024, and now it has come to pass fully. As midterms approach, GOP lawmakers, candidates, strategists, people in the White House are warning that mass deportations and the wall-to-wall coverage of all the chaos could cost them their razor-thin House majority. If only somebody told us that that is how it would play out. Oh, wait, I did. I said specifically this would happen. I said in 2026, it'll be a repeat of 2018. You're heading into the midterms. I said even those words. I said there will be wall-to-wall coverage of the atrocities, the crying kids, the rest of it. I said, and the administration will back down, and then that will be it. Here we are. It says, the administration's forceful approach across the U.S. risks repelling the swing voters who fueled Trump's return to the White House, but are increasingly wary of how the president is implementing a central campaign promise. Further complementing the issue is that Republicans are split on the best way to address that eroding support, with some in the party viewing it as a messaging problem. Others argue that the administration's policy itself is driving voter concerns. Representative Dan Newhouse from Washington, a Republican, said, if we don't change our approach, it will have negative effects on the midterms for sure. Maria Salazar, Republican from Florida, said, ICE should focus on the bad hombres. The bad hombres, that's it, not the cleaning ladies. One thing is the gardeners, another thing is the gangsters. One thing is the cooks, the other is the coyotes. A person close to the White House, granted anonymity to speak candidly, said Republicans have to keep the focus on criminal arrests, public safety, and the Trump administration's success in securing the southern border, which are more popular with voters across the board. Otherwise, the person worried the GOP is losing support with moderate Republicans, independents, Latinos, and young voters. Well, well, well. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. I said this exactly in 2024. Specifically, I said, I'm not voting for Trump. I said, because this mass deportation thing is never going to happen. I said, and if you read between the lines, they're telling you that. Whenever Vance and Trump were pushed during the election on the policy, they would say, we're going to prioritize the bad hombres, the criminals, then we'll worry about everybody else. Well, you know what? They've been saying that for 15 years. Everybody has been saying that for 15 years. That is the new status quo. That is the new consensus, which is mass deportations means amnesty for everyone that isn't bothering anybody and deportations for murderers and rapists. Okay, well, as it should be, I mean, obviously, it should be a given that you deport a murderer. We should deport everybody. But that's the consensus since like 2010 or something. And so Trump and Vance, during the election, they would say this. They would say, well, we'll just worry about that other stuff later. We'll build the wall, we'll deport the criminals, then we'll worry about everybody later. That is code for we're never deporting those other people. That's code for we're going to secure the border, we're going to deport the criminals, and then we're going to kick the can down the road on everybody else. It'll be somebody else's problem. That's what they meant. And if you want to deport millions of people, you need a lot of money for that. And you need serious people. And like we talked about before, they never at any time indicated that they were going to bring that level of seriousness to the table. They didn't treat mass deportations like it would be this central part of the administration, which it would need to be. They were treating it like it was one among other things. So we knew that. And I told you, I said, you don't have 4 years to get deportations up. I said, first of all, we got to hit the ground running. I said, we got to hit the ground running. How we do in 2025 is going to tell us how we'll do in the future. In 2025, there'll be no resistance. I said, so if you want deportations, you got to get them started early. And if they don't get started early, I said, that's a very bad sign. Because in the midterms, in 26, the Republicans will be very averse. They'll be very shy, gun shy about doing any of this stuff. Because you'll have the media playing it up. And if you're deporting tons of people, it's going to be contentious. It's going to be controversial. The media is going to shove their cameras all over it. And it's going to turn into a thing. And there'll be extraordinary and acute public pressure on Trump to stop it. I said, so you really got to set the precedent in 25. If you really want deportations, they're going to have to happen in that first year. I said, because then 26 happens. There's going to be this pressure. And then you lose the midterms. Then they're going to shut it down. I told you this is exactly how it would play out, and this is exactly what is now happening. And mark my words, mass deportations are over. It's done. I've seen enough. I'm calling it. It's fucking done. Because, and I said this before, we've seen this movie already. This is precisely what happened in 2018. In Trump's first term, he wins the election. After the election, illegal immigration plummets. Because foreign nationals anticipate that there will be enforcement. In other words, they don't even try to cross the border because they think with Trump in charge, they're going to get caught. Slowly, they figure out the border isn't all that secure. So they start coming in anyway. By September 2017, you start getting caravans from the Northern Triangle. These huge inflows of thousands of people, 20,000 people in one go from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. They're pouring in. Trump starts talking about an amnesty, talking about DACA, the rest of it. Now, Trump, with Tom Homan and with Stephen Miller, the same cast of characters, how do they shut down these caravans? They implement the child separation policy. If illegal immigrants cross the border with kids, unaccompanied minors, under catch and release, we have to pick them up and bring them into the country. Because we can't detain the children with the adults. So this was a huge loophole. You talk about loopholes in our immigration laws, unaccompanied minors are a huge source of catch and release. They're a huge part of the loophole. Because if an adult comes in with a little kid, you can't put him in the same place because kids can't be with criminal adults. So we have to pick him up, scoop him up, bring him into the inside of the country, and we give him a court date and we say, we'll see you later. Huge part of the problem. So Trump, Homan, and Stephen Miller, and at that time, Kirstjen Nielsen, another woman at DHS, they implement family separation. And they say, we're going to detain the kids away from the adults, and that way we can keep them at the border. We can apprehend them at the border, we can detain them at the border, and we can adjudicate their asylum request without releasing them. Famously, you know, the rest is history. And for those that got red-pilled after COVID, for all these plan-trusting idiots that woke up after COVID, let me tell you what happened next. Throughout the summer of 2018, you had wall-to-wall coverage of kids in cages from the media. Kids in cages, kids in cages, kids in... Those were the magic words. And it was every day of the week, any time of the day, in the New York Times, on CNN, on NBC, kids in cages. And they portrayed it then as they are now, that this is a concentration camp. It's the Gestapo. What kind of president puts little kids in cages? And the Trump administration tried to fight it at first. They said, well, Obama built them. Obama did it too. You know, they tried the rhetorical pivot. And then, and I know this firsthand because I know people from the administration and I've heard this from them. In the summer, Trump picks up the phone, calls Stephen Miller and says, Stephen, we got to shut it down. We got to stop this. We're getting killed out here. And they reversed the policy. And you got another caravan in the spring of 2018. You got another caravan in the fall of 2018. And in May and June of 2019, after the midterms, you had the highest total number of southern border apprehensions in those months in 20 years. You had more illegal immigrants cross the border in May and June than any other May and June since the year 2000, since Bill Clinton was president. I guess it would have been George W. Well, no, it was Bill Clinton at that time. Okay? That's what happened in 2018. And I said this in 2024. I said exactly that story. I said, this is how it's going to go. You think you're going to get mass deportations. They're going to try them. They will try in vain. They'll get some people out. I said, but the second that the midterms start, the cameras are going to go. You're going to get the same program. Trump is going to back down because he's not serious. And it's the same cast of characters. This time he got Trump, Homan, Miller, and instead of Kirstjen Nielsen, he got Kristi Noem. Now here we are. And how many of these statements have we gotten just this month? In the first week of December, we get a planted story that says Trump administration officials are wobbling. They're getting nervous. They're second-guessing themselves. We get a planted story that says anonymous sources in the White House say that we need to recalibrate and re-strategize on immigration enforcement, and Trump doesn't like what he's seeing. Then a week later, Trump himself goes to a press conference and says, you know, we don't want to deport the people at the luncheonettes, which is kind of like an anachronism. We don't want to deport the people that are on the farms. We only want to focus on the criminals. That was two. Now we're getting all this. Now we get all this. Now we get Bovino out. Border Patrol is being told only detain the criminals. You get Kristi Noem is going to get tossed out. She's getting thrown under the bus, isolated. Maybe they'll kick her out after the World Cup. Who knows? Maybe she'll go sooner. Republican senators want to impeach her. Trump goes out and says, this is really bad stuff. We need to de-escalate. There will be more of it. It's over. It's over. Because here's what it would take for it to not be over. If we deported 230,000 in 2025, we need to 4X those numbers to get to 1 million, which is the low end of what we need. You need to 4X that at the minimum, okay? That's low. You think that in the midterms with all this going on, we're going to 4X? Triple? Double? You're lucky if you even get as many. You will be lucky if you even get that many in 2026 and it's not lower. It might be the same. It might be a little bit more. It could be even fewer in 2026. And then, you know what's going to happen? They're going to lose the midterms anyway. Oh, I can't wait. So they are going to totally cave and capitulate because Trump always chickens out on everything. He chickens out with China. He chickens out with Russia. He chickens out with trade. He chickens out with Greenland, with Europe, with this. He chickens out on everything. Trump will totally capitulate. He's going to deliver more scalps on a silver platter to the left, scalp delivery service. Here's Bovino. Here's Miller. Miller will probably stay. Here's Kristi Noem. And then we're going to lose the midterms anyway. And then here's when it really gets good. Mark my words. January 2027, the new Congress is seated. We have a divided government. Day one, Democrats are putting up articles of impeachment against Trump, against Hegseth. They are going to subpoena Kristi Noem. They're going to subpoena all these people. They are going to call a subcommittee. They're going to grind everything to a halt. We're going to find out about all these crimes. We're going to find out about all the corruption and the stealing and the graft in the administration. And the deportations are not going to go up. It's going to be it. And if Trump couldn't do it, who's going to do it? If Trump, winning the popular vote, winning the Electoral College landslide on a platform of mass deportations, if he can't do it, who's going to do it? J.D. Vance, don't make me laugh. Ron DeSantis, Marco Rubio, who's going to do it then? If Trump can't stand up to these people, if Trump can't sell it, if he can't deliver after being the president already for 4 years and being shot and prosecuted and the rest of it, who's going to do it? And you know what else? This is going to destroy popular support for immigration enforcement. It's just over. Okay. Trump is a disaster. He will continue sinking and sliding, and it's going to take all of it with him. All the good stuff is going to go down with him. Nationalism, nativism, immigration enforcement, all the good stuff is going to go down with him. The left will seize the initiative. The left will seize the initiative on restraining Israel, ending the wars, the Epstein files, abolishing ICE, whatever, left-wing populism, affordability, housing, healthcare. Well, you know, I told you so. I told you it'd be like this. Now we're here. This is why I didn't vote. I told you we're going to get a war with Iran, no mass deportations, and corporate tax cut. And we're there. We got all three. Trifecta. We're sailing to Iran right now, war gaming across the Middle East. The deportations are cooked after this. They're cooked after the midterms. And we got the tax cut extension last year. So, happy? Got what you voted for? Now, here's the last thing, and then we'll move on about that. I was saying these things in 2024. Everything I'm saying now, people might say, oh, I can't believe... Some people are saying, oh, well, that was obvious. I see all these people that should die saying, well, that was an obvious prediction. Anyone could have predicted that. No, nobody predicted that. Nobody did. I lived it. In 2024, everybody attacked me for saying this. Specifically, what did they say? Everything I'm saying now, I was saying then. I've been absolutely consistent. Absolutely, totally consistent on this. 100%. I didn't vote. So I put my money where my mouth is, and I lost money for going against Trump, actually. Now people say, oh, it was always obvious. Oh, everyone could have seen this coming. Well, when I was saying this in 2024, do you know what right-wing influencers said about me? It was specific. They said that after January 6th, I cut a deal with the FBI, the Biden DOJ, to evade prosecution, and in return, I was going to shill for the Democrats. That's what they said. So when, in 2024, I warned everybody, I was warning you, and I'm right. In 24, when I told you, take it to the bank, we're going to war with Iran, they're not going to do mass deportations, you're only getting a tax cut, they're going to increase H-1Bs. When I said this in 2024, it was obvious then, just as it is now happening today, people said, why is he saying this? oh, the only reason he could say this is because he's a Fed. There's a conspiracy. He took a deal. Now, what does this say about that narrative? What does that tell you? Something very interesting is going on, which is that there's a lot of money riding on Trump getting elected in 2024. Tucker Carlson campaigned for Trump. Candace Owens campaigned for Trump. They all campaigned for Trump. I guess they overlooked all this stuff. They didn't see it coming. They didn't know. I was the only one, not Candace, not Tucker, not none of these people. I was the only one that said, I'm going to take the radical and dramatic and very risky step of telling everybody don't vote. And I took a big career hit for that. People said I was finished. Close friends turned on me. Even my family. My mom called me up. She's like, I don't get what you're doing right now. It was universal. Everybody was pro-Trump in 24. Everybody on the right wing. Nobody was sticking it out. I have maybe 15 friends, and half of them were not fucking with that. Half of them were working for the campaign. They said I wasn't being loyal to the president. These are people that I've had a birthday party with. These are people that I've broken bread with, that I know. So believe me when I tell you, it was not obvious back then. Nobody was saying it. Tucker was at the RNC. Candace supported it. And for being right, I was called the Fed. Now, what does this tell you? It tells you something very interesting. If Trump never got elected, Larry Ellison would have never acquired TikTok. Harvard would never have gotten a Jewish president. Columbia would have never gotten a Jewish president as they just did recently. The Zionists wouldn't have shut down the universities. They wouldn't have taken control of TikTok. Maybe they wouldn't have taken control of CBS. They might get Warner Brothers. Would have never went to war with Iran, or if we did, it would have been the Democrats. And they called me a Fed for saying this. Really, really interesting. So who was being paid to say that? Who among the Republican influencers was being paid? Tucker Carlson was insinuating that constantly. He said, I'm David Duke. He said, I hug the Republicans. Then he's mad that I attacked the Republicans. Wasn't that funny? Tucker said that I'm like David Duke, and I was deployed by the CIA to wrap my arms around Republicans and poison them by proximity, to hurt them by association. I'm supposed to make myself to be the most radical guy, and then by publicly supporting a Republican, I'm going to tarnish their image. But then he also said, if you're America first, why are you attacking Republicans who are America first? So, okay, so which is it? If I'm friendly with somebody, I'm trying to torpedo them. If I'm attacking them, I'm a hypocrite. If I'm friendly with them, oh, well, you're just trying to hurt them with your image. If I'm attacking them, oh, well, you're supposed to be America first. Why don't you support these people? And then when I rightly predicted that Trump was going to be a disaster, I said all these arguments then. It wasn't a guess. It wasn't a gut feeling. I laid out these arguments then. I remember the data points. I said Nikki Haley went to Israel for Miriam Adelson, endorsed Trump, and then there was a quid pro quo between Adelson and Trump to promise him a $100 million check. May 2024, Google it. How did Vance become the nominee? How did I predict that Vance would be the VP in May? Because somebody told me. Because Vance connected Little Tech to Trump. Jacob Hellberg cut an $830,000 check to the Joint Campaign Committee in March. In June, Vance brokered a deal where David Sacks would host a fundraiser at his house with all the Little Tech money, Andreessen Horowitz and Sean McGuire and all these other guys, and they were going to back Trump to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. That's how you knew Vance was going to be the guy. And when Trump appeared on the All In podcast with David Sacks a week later, that's when he said he would staple green cards to diplomas. When Vance became the VP at the RNC in July 2024, he sat with an interview for Sean Hannity, his first interview since getting the nod. Do you know what the first thing he said was? We need to punch Iran in the face really hard. In the spring of 2024, he went to an anti-war think tank, the Quincy Institute, which promulgates the restraint doctrine created by Barry Posen, And he said, we need an America first foreign policy that is pro-Israel, meaning we need to give Israel what they need to bomb Iran. And we need to work with Israel on missile defense and an Abraham alliance. It's all the receipts are there. We knew this. When Vance and Trump were questioned about mass deportations, they said only the criminals. They said repeatedly at rallies, only the criminals. And we need the people to come in legally. They said it repeatedly. When Trump met with Netanyahu, Trump came out and said that Iran is going to kill me. When Netanyahu addressed a joint session of Congress, he said that Iran is trying to kill the president. So we knew this. We been knew this. We knew this in 2024. And I was trying to tell you. I tried to warn you. I showed you this. And I tried to turn people out. I went and bought a billboard in Michigan. And we did this campaign on True Social and on Twitter. And the campaign said, no war with Iran, no immigration. We tried. And you had Paige Shills telling everybody, don't listen. Don't listen. That's not real. Trust the plan. Everything's fine. Don't black pill. Trump just said this and you're black pilling. It was guys like Andrew Torba. You know, and I know me and Torba are cool, but Torba, you were fucking wrong, bitch. We're cool now. I like the guy. But this guy was the epitome of smug and self-assured and ultimately completely wrong. And they all were. You know what Mike Cernovich said? Mike Cernovich, who was going around telling everybody I'm a Fed because I know everybody, I have eyes everywhere. Mike Cernovich and Tucker are going around telling everybody I'm a Fed. Cernovich in 24 said, well, we'll pressure Trump after he wins the election. You know what he said the other day? He said, it looks like Trump is pulling out of Minnesota. I hope that's not true. That's your pressuring the administration. The administration needs to be pressured. He goes on Twitter and says, I hope they're not withdrawing. These were the people. It was Old Glory Hole Club. It was Cernovich. It was Passover Press. It was all these different people. They said, pay no attention to Fuentes. He's a Democrat. Oh, he's with Harris. Oh, he's with the Biden DOJ. He took the deal, blah, blah. While they shilled for the most Zionist bullshit administration in history. And now look at what you got. Epstein files covered up. No deportations. War with Iran. Exactly as I said. What does that tell you about those people that try to get you not to listen? Those people that are being paid under the table. There was a big piece about this in the Wall Street Journal 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it talks about how the new form of lobbying is influencers. In the old days, you need to register as a lobbyist. And a special interest would pay a specialized person to go to DC and wine and dine the congressman. Now, it's completely unregulated. The parties, the PACs, the committees, they will shell out unlimited money to influencers on Twitter. It's exorbitant. It's obscene. And they start shilling for stuff like, we need to go to war in the Congo. We need to go to war in the Congo and relieve them from the Rwandan proxies. We need to go to war in Nigeria. We need to go to war in the Congo for their minerals. India is paying these people. India, Congo, Israel, of course. Qatar, I'm sure. There's so much money. The system is awash with this kind of cash. I'm the only one that isn't taking lobbyist money. I'm the only one that isn't taking influencer money. And by the way, that's a big part of why I am extreme and provocative. Because somebody that is going out there and saying nigger every day, and someone that's going out there and is just offending people for no reason, people say, why is he doing this? Because I'm a free man. I'm an independent man. I'm not relying on a check coming in from India to write some report about how, you know, the real problem is Pakistan. I'm not getting a check from Congo to talk about how there's a Christian genocide and we need to fight Rwanda and Uganda in the East. So that's a little note about my credibility. You don't need to watch me because you're in love with me. You don't need to watch me because you think I'm a great guy. You need to watch me because I'm the only one that has my finger on the pulse. I told you this was going to happen. If you wanted to know the future, you should have watched my show. Everybody else is watching all this other nonsense because that nonsense reaffirms what you feel in the present moment. So whether that is being pro-Trump, whether that's blaming Charlie Kirk's death on Israel, saying that ICE is in bed with the IDF, you know, whatever the flavor of the month is, the flavor of the month in 24 was Trump. The flavor of the month now is like third worldism. It's that perspicacity. That's what makes the difference. And you really need to wonder about those people that tried to discredit me, because that's what they did. They didn't argue with me. They didn't debate me. They didn't refute me. They just tried to discredit me with unsubstantiated allegations. And they did that simply to get people to take their eye off the ball long enough to fork over their votes. Don't pay attention to what this guy is saying. Just give us your vote. And then they disappeared after that. And then it was one disaster after another. Now it's 2026. People are wondering how it got so bad. People are left wondering. They're left with their assholes sore, not to be gross, but they are literally the raped. They have been absolutely raped. They have been date raped, drugged, violated, and they wake up saying, oh, what happened? I thought it was going to be a golden age. Wait, where's the Creed concerts? Jack Posobiec told me it was going to be a never-ending Creed concert. John Doyle said to trust the plan. It's a joke. We need something more radical and more extreme and more intense than anybody thinks is reasonable right now. That is what needs to happen. ICE has not gone far enough. Trump and the National Guard have not gone far enough. What's the answer to Trumpism? We need to build upon Trumpism. We need to deepen it. We need to expand it. We need to make it more radical. We need somebody in 2028 that makes Donald Trump look like a fucking joke. That's the only solution. That's what makes me worried. When I see people crying about a couple of dead left-wing protesters, you are simply not prepared for what has to happen next. There needs to be a lot more ICE. There needs to be a lot more of that sort of thing before we take our country back. So we need to start laying the groundwork. We need to start imagining and visualizing what it's going to take to save our country. This is not the tragedy. We are going to be the tragedy if we don't win the battle. Renee Good, Alex Priddy, wait until Western civilization falls. That's the tragedy. Wait until they raise the flag of BLM. They raise the flag of the Islamic Crescent. They raise the hammer and sickle, the Star of David. Wait until they raise that flag over our defeated civilization when we live among the ruins, hunted like animals in South Africa. You think this is a tragedy? Let me give you a crystal ball. I'll show you the tragedy. This is not a tragedy. This is nothing. This is a good start. But we need somebody to finish the job. That's the difference. So anyway, we're going to move on. We'll take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. I'm going to get set up here with my headphones. But that's real. I've been loving what Bannon has been saying. I'm trying. He has been so hardcore. I love it. We need someone pushing that message. It has to be victory. Victory at any cost. Victory over everything. Only victory. There is no substitute for a total American victory. And I don't care how many left-wing protesters have to be ground under the treads of the tanks to get there. I don't care how many five-year-olds need to be arrested. That's the kind of mindset we need to bring to the table. Otherwise, you should just go fuck off to some other country and wait for America to fall. We got to get serious. We have to get serious.